Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Hourglass Bride. It is such a joy and such a pleasure to be with you today. It has been such an exciting few weeks. We are now taking Hourglass Bride to television, and so many of your favorite guests for the past few years have been flying in and in live on TV, and we look forward to launching the show in May, and so you'll be able to see us live as well as all this incredible information that you've been providing here, and the guests have just been magical. So it's really been a joy. It's been so much fun. And we are now sending podcasts of our show. So any of the shows that you have absolutely loved, adored, felt like they changed your life. I know some of the shows and the guests I've listened to over and over and over again. And if you would like that capability, all you have to do is pick up your phone and text to 55678. Again, the text is 55678, and the message is simply Nicole, and right in the palm of your hand, you'll be able to get today's show as well as all of our previous shows and archives. So really thrilling and exciting time, and it's such a joy to be here. Today we have a really special show and honestly unique from everything that we have done so far and that we've been bringing to you. I actually saw today's guest speak at an event, and I was just blown away by what she does. Her name is Erin Smilkstein, and she is the Homework Lounge. And she actually helps tutor and open the doorways to math online in just an impeccable, creative way. And however your learning skill or your child's learning skill, it is a way to make it fun, to make it easy, to make it freeing, to make it joyous and humorous, and all of these things. And growing up, that was certainly not my experience with math. And it's fabulous because I saw her, you know, speak, and I was just like, wow, what a powerful, wonderful idea. And then she was just so amazing. She came onto the television show, and I learned so very much from her. And so I kind of begged her to come on the radio show, and so we're so lucky to have her with her today. So if you have a child who has been banging their head or struggling or having walls or barriers with math, or you yourself grew up with math difficulties or is saying that you're not good at math or ever had that belief, then this definitely is the show for you. All right, so we're elated. We're jumping up and down. Our ears are perked. We are on the edge of the seats for today's show on the Homework Lounge and how to make math easy. Erin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. That was such a wonderful intro, and it's so good to talk to you again.
Oh, you too. I learned so much from you. Oh, my goodness. And it's interesting because, you know, we brought you on the television show, and as always, you have people on the sound stage and film crews and sound people and whatever. And you left, and everybody was like, that was incredible. That was amazing. And so, you know, so it's so wonderful to have you here today. And so this is a new audience with new hearts open and new ears awaiting. And so, you know, so share with me and share with our audience some of your background, because one of the things that intrigued me the most about what you were saying is that you were not good at math. And it's funny because I had breakfast with a friend of mine from Italy today. And I was telling her the conversation that we shared, and she said, isn't that funny? She said, math was always really, like, easy for me. And I almost had to hide it from my friends because it was so difficult for my friends that I didn't want to, you know, be different or out of place. But you were not one of these children that math was easy for, right?
No, I had to work really hard. I had to work really hard to get it. And part of the reason, I think, is I've been able to really tap into how kids learn is because of those struggles, because I had to go through that pain of being like, this doesn't make any sense, and yet being able to build that muscle, that mental muscle of working through something until I got it. So through that, through trial and error, through the tears, through not understanding things, I think I was able to build a really good understanding of what it feels like not to get it, and so that way I can come up with a lot of creative ways to help kids to get it.
Oh my gosh, it's incredible. So tell me your journey and path, because I'm so excited to know you or me, and that math was not you know, as easy. And one of the interesting things that we're talking about, and it's an interesting conversation, even for all of our listeners, that when they're off the show, that they have with their family or their friends or at a dinner party or at a cocktail party or at work, mm-hmm. is that we were saying that if you can't read or write, that most people, that's like a shameful thing and they don't talk about it. And somebody doesn't say, I have trouble reading, or even dyslexia, if someone has trouble with dyslexia, they don't ever say, I have difficulty reading, this is a problem. It's just sort of a quiet, silent, you know, struggle. But yet, if somebody is struggling with math, or they have problems with math, or they think they're bad at math, they tell everyone that they're bad at math. And it becomes point of a cocktail conversation. Is that true?
Yeah, I think what's happened is there's been kind of almost this reverse of what happens with reading, in that being really good at math, like your friend said, is almost something you hide. It's almost stigma being good at math. Well, that must be a nerd. You like math? Oh, there's something socially wrong with you. Whereas not liking math or not being good at math is something that we accept socially and we share and we laugh about. And so many people have war stories about teaching and about being in a math class they didn't understand. And a lot of times I have to say, well, you know what, maybe that just wasn't the class for you. Maybe you weren't taught in a way that made sense to you. Because from my perspective and my experience, there's no reason that kids can't get math. It can be challenging sometimes. It can be a hurdle they have to get through. But I don't come across kids who can't get it once we figure out what that in is, once we figure out where the breakdowns are. And it's not just right brain, left brain, because honestly, that's it's a fairly common myth that people think with one side of their brain or the other. I mean, your brain's connected in the middle. There's a huge connection called the corpus callosum, and your two sides of your brain have to talk. So what happens is, I think people decide for themselves, because of something that happened emotionally, that they're not good at this, and they stop trying. And it's funny, I was thinking of a story, actually, where that happened to me, and it was my grandfather, who has now passed away, but we were at Donna Lake, and he was going to teach me to windsurf. And I was a teenager, and I was very excited, because I'd been a snowboarder for as long as snowboarding has been a sport. And I got up once, and he kind of gave me some instructions. I fell off, and he said, okay, that's great. And he had me come back to the dock. And he patted me on the shoulder, and I was so confused. And I went in the house, and I was like, huh, that's it? But, oh, okay, I guess that's it. He sent me a letter later saying, well, I guess windsurfing isn't your thing. And I was thinking, wait a second. I only got to fail once. Like, you have to give somebody a chance to fail several times before you decide it's not their thing. So with math, what happens, I think, is kids fail once, or they just have that one time that just hurts them, and they decide for themselves that they are no longer good at this. And so what I'd like to do is bring the beauty of those mistakes out into the open and say, look, it's math. You're supposed to make mistakes. I mean, there's no mathematician in the world that didn't make thousands of mistakes before they got to something that really mattered. So let's find the inner mathematician in all of us. Let's find where that fun part is, where that puzzle part is, where the part of the kid opens up and they go, oh, wait, I want to try this. I want to do it again. And, you know, let them get back up on that board a couple more times before we start telling them, oh, you're not good at this. So, you know, it's a big goal, I think, but I think we can start showing kids that even though it looks hard, that the gift of the hard work and working through it is an amazing opportunity for growth.
It's incredible, and I love the conversation that we were having about how everybody learns differently, when we were talking about visual learners and auditory learners and kinesthetic learners. And one of the things that sticks in my mind from my childhood is my brother learns completely different than I do. And I remember that my brother used to listen to heavy metal, and he would study Latin. And my brother speaks 9 languages fluently. I mean, just he speaks every language as if it's his own. But he would be studying Latin, and music would be blaring, this heavy whatever. And when I wanted to read or study or anything, I would unplug like everything in my room, the clocks. And when I got older, I would unplug the refrigerator, even like I needed complete silence to think.
Yeah, and, no, I love that you bring that up. Oh, just the difference in the way that people, their environments. I mean, one of the things I do when I first meet with families is offer them an evaluation of learning style and math. And if they want, we can do a reading one too. But the learning style one goes through specifics of what kind of environment do you like. Some people like it cooler. Some people like it warmer. Some people like sound, or they're actually stimulated by having some extra auditory in the back. Some people can't handle that at all. Some people want lights dim. Some people want lights bright. But maybe what happens is we assume that our children are going to learn in the exact same way that we did and not give them that chance to kind of alter their environment. Or some kids want to sit on a couch and they're very comfortable. They want to be very comfortable and relaxed when they're studying, and that actually gets them into a better place to learn more, whereas some kids need to sit upright in a desk. But if we're making all the kids sit upright in a desk, we might be missing out on those kids who need to lay on a bed to do better. But we just, I think we have kind of standards of what we think it should look like, and we're learning now that it doesn't have to look like that. There's many different ways to learn.
Right. I mean, and one of the things that I was absolutely fascinated with that, you know, we started getting into on the television show was we were sharing about, you know, stories and problem solving and the way where our mind goes to when we problem solve. And, you know, I know that we were discussing that. I was saying that if the problem was that the family had five apples, and then there was a math equation, I was all concerned because five apples was not enough to family and that they were going to starve. And I couldn't even think about numbers because I was so worried about that poor family.
And that is where the beauty of you comes in and being able to think that way. So I think you should have had a teacher that would have said, well, how many apples would feed this family? What percent increase would we have in apples in order to make them sustain life? And if you had been given a problem in that way, in a way that you understand the world, it probably would have made all the difference in how you appreciate math.
Yes. So I love this. So tell me, so you were terrible at math, or not terrible, but not so much.
I think
it wasn't
did.
As quick as your other subjects. And then you, how did you start? What was the path that led you to saying, oh, my gosh, this is kind of cool and fun, and I can do this?
Yeah, really, let's see. Well, it's hard to say where I remember being really successful. I remember being successful in math in 10th grade geometry. And I had this teacher, and he was very quiet. He was a very interesting, quiet mathematician, but for some reason, he took me under his wing. And even though I wasn't the top student, I wasn't the quickest student, he always made it okay for me to try. He always made it okay for me to make mistakes and then try again. And I just remember this one time, him doing a proof on the board, and I went up and I corrected the proof, and he just squeezed my hand, like, didn't make a big deal of it, but just let me know. He was like, yes, this, you're trying. Like, I was completely out of my comfort zone. I was actually a kid who loved writing poetry. I loved writing poetry as a kid. Now, perhaps somewhere along the line, I was told I wasn't very good at it, and maybe I didn't pursue it that way. So in the same way that kids are often told they're not good at math, you kind of stop pursuing what you're told you're not good at. But I think math is such a valuable skill. It's such an important way of learning how to think about the world that shutting kids down from having that opportunity to open those doors and think about it is a huge disservice. So in the late 90s when I was in college, well, actually, that's not true. Mid-90s? Oh, my gosh. anyway, it's too long ago to think about now. But I didn't start out as a math major, and I ended up getting a degree in mathematics, and then I went on to my master's in education. But I was a computer programmer. I decided that would be a really great in, and probably it would have, but sitting and programming computers was not where my heart was. And I did a lot of outside stuff while I was in college, so I started volunteering in the second grade classroom in this lower income area, and I loved it, and I really bonded with the kids. And in fact, the teacher actually had me working in small groups with the kids and not the TA that was there working on her credential. And I remember that caused a little rift, but I went back to my counselor and I said, I want to change my major. And she said, to what? I said, teaching. I want to teach. That's what I want to do. She said, well, we don't have an education major. We don't have an education department. And I said, okay, I'll major in math. And that was a very odd decision. And there's nothing up to that point that would have had anybody believe that I would have been majoring in math. But I wanted to use my college years as a way to really grow and learn something that I didn't know much about. And I ended up falling in love with it. But there was probably a year and a half where I didn't come out of my room from studying. I was studying all the time. Like, people literally thought I had gone abroad for the year. Because they didn't see me.
That's wonderful. Oh, my gosh, it's great.
I was like, no, I've been here just studying. But finally, I was able to work through it and really figure out, okay, how is it that I learn? And I got my systems down, and I figured out how to ask for help and which people were best for me to study with. And I did it. And I ended up loving being a math teacher. I was like, I want to do this. I want to be able to show kids that even though sometimes it feels really scary, there's a way to do it, and there's a unique beauty to it and a value. And that's what I've spent my career doing.
That's amazing. And then how did you come up with the homework lab? Because this is one of the best concepts that I've ever heard about. And then not only that, I went online. And you and I had a discussion that I think changed so much because we were talking about kids that I know. And I remember listening to these kids, the sadness, the disappointment, the heartache of the fact that not only were they having difficulty in math, but then they had to go to summer school, and then they had to be tutored. And by going to summer school, that they couldn't go to camp where the other kids went, or they couldn't be part of summer activities, local summer activities, and that it took them away from the childhood and the summer that they wanted to have, or the spring break that they wanted to have. And you said that your program was designed so kids can have their life, that they can.
Yeah, they need to.
Be huge, huge. So what was the impetus for designing this program, and how does it work? Because I'm just jumping up and down because I think this is just the greatest idea since sliced bread. This is fabulous.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it has come about since I started really exploring how I could reach students without having to drive a long way to them or have them drive a long way to me. And really, I was looking for solutions. I was looking for solutions of a way to make the in-person tutoring experience basically the same, but in an online environment. And I spent several months going through and testing virtually every single platform I could find out there and putting together one that felt really real, where I could meet with students in a secure online environment and have them actually even take cell phone pictures of their work and send it to me, just on my cell phone, because that's really easy. They just text it to me. And I put it up on our screen, and we can interact and both use it, both write on the screen. So we're doing problems together with video and audio and the ability to actually work on each other's screens, which is pretty high-tech, at the same time. So we can jump around the web, play different games, and I can find different ways to keep them engaged rather than just saying, okay, all we're doing is homework, okay, bye-bye. And the big picture, what I really want to do is actually build it into an online environment that feels like a lounge, that actually feels like you walk into some sort of virtual coffee shop and you find a study group and you meet with them. And you have a teacher wandering around. So when you have questions, the group raises their hands. I can come over, help you out, and you guys get back to work. So really trying, my ultimate goal is students to be independent thinkers and learners. And you have to start with a lot of teacher input. So it's based on something called gradual release of responsibility, which means at first there's a huge amount of teacher input and support or tutor input and support, meeting one-on-one with the tutor. They really do basically hand-holding, getting you through, but start gradually giving the responsibility to the student. So now it's the student's responsibility to come say, hey, I have this question, and come up with the questions. And it's a really great model for building kids into really secure learners. A lot of times what happens with kids who have tutors who are strictly keeping them, what we talked about before, just keeping them floating, doing the homework so that week to week they continue to turn their homework in, but never really going back and building that solid foundation, what I called really building the raft to keep them so they can float by themselves, is a concept called learned helplessness. Are you familiar with that?
No, teach it to me. I love it. I learned.
It's a kind of pervasive thing that happens, but learned helplessness happens when a child has been given so many tools of support that they start to rely more on those tools than themselves. So just like it sounds, they learn to be helpless. They learn to say, I don't know how to open my book, because someone will always come in and do it for them. And so when I come in, yes, we definitely want to get them to an independent point, but I don't come in like a drill sergeant. Okay, now you have to do it yourself. This is it. Boom, here's your book. Do it. What we do is we gradually get them to the point where they're saying, wait, I'm going to do this myself. It's when I know that we have a very successful program, when the kids stop me and say, don't tell me, don't tell me. Oh, good, okay, I'll just be quiet. And then I get to tell the parents, look, I think we did it. We're done here. Because my ultimate goal is not to stay with kids for their lifetime. I mean, some of them, it would be fun to, but that's not what a really good education program is supposed to do.
This is just so brilliant. I love this idea. I mean, it's really amazing. And then what is the age range? What's the youngest and what's the oldest, and the parents get to take classes too?
Yeah, I actually had this idea where it was math for moms, and teaching a class where parents sat down with their kids and did all the work together so that they could learn fractions and decimals and all the things that happen in middle school, which is where many parents tend to actually kind of fall off, because they made it through elementary school with the math, and then somewhere along that lines of the fifth, sixth, seventh grade is where they went, okay, I'm done. But usually my age range is between third and eighth grade is really where I like to hit and really get in there, because, one, I find that age range just fascinating with all the things going on with them and the way they're building their self-concept. The way that math comes into that through what we call math esteem, meaning kids are building an image or a concept about themselves based on how they are at math. And I want to really try to help kids build a positive math esteem, build something positive where they have that go-getter attitude, that go, I can do this attitude, which is really going to be something that is going to help them as they move on to higher math.
Just fantastic. And then you have some programs too as well, which, I think it's amazing that not only are you working individually with the children, but that you also have programs. Are the programs for the parents? Are they for homeschooling or for teachers or for the kids themselves?
They are designed straight to the students. They are designed, however, to be really good teaching tools, not practice tools so much, but teaching tools, meaning getting in and really helping kids understand concepts and language that they understand, so that they can see how much fun it can be to work fractions, which you know, fun with fractions. What? How is that even possible? But I find I love working with fractions. I love teaching kids about the concept of fractions and moving them far beyond drawing a circle and dividing the pizza. Well, it's fractions are more than just pizza, so let's get in and find where they're really cool. But because they're built for the kids, they actually work really well for homeschool kids and for parents who say, well, wait, we need to go back and refresh these things, and they've already passed it over in school, they're on to the next unit, but we didn't get it. So now there's this video series they can watch. And the lessons are all between 3 and 12 minutes broken down. So you can just watch a few minutes, get a little piece of the concept and move on at that time if you're ready, or just stop and work some of the problems, do some of the games that are recommended, and do the next part next. What I like about it, though, is because it's based directly on how I work with students anyway, is it's really easy for them to get on the phone or email me with questions. They can reach me, and then we can talk about it. So
that's great.
Very excited about those.
And it's a multiplication one as well, correct?
Yes, yes, we are launching the Multiplication Miracles Technique, and it's a kit. It's a virtual kit. So there are things that you can download and print off. Do is when you purchase a kit, you are purchasing really your own online classroom that no one else has access to, that you can draw directly on the worksheets and the things on the screen. So you can interact with the screen, watch the videos. There's buttons to click that will take you to different sites to go play games or to do a little more practice. But it's the same environment that I use for my own classes, but I figured out a way working with the host, it's called Vue, V-Y-E-W.com, to build it so that I can offer people their individual classes with my content already in them. So it's we're really excited about that.
This is just, it's so wonderful. And one of the things that I was absolutely fascinated with, we were, you know, talking about your twins. And how old are they? They're like 3?
They're 3. They just turned 3. They're my Valen twins. They're born on Valentine's Day. So they now fancy themselves big kids.
That's
3 years old.
That must be the most precious thing in the world to have 3-year-old twins. I mean, I could just imagine. It's just joy and abundance and love and happiness and effervescence and glee. It's all wrapped up together there.
It is. So. It's incredible.
And then so you've got your own kids. And so do you start to teach them math? Or at what age do you teach little wee ones how to add or how to think in these concepts?
I think we need to start teaching parents to think of math the way we think of language. When we talk about language skills, we don't say, well, at what age do you start teaching poetry? Parents start singing to their children in rhymes and rhythms and teaching them basic phrasing as soon as they're born. So we know from research that children's brains, there's a great book called The Scientist in the Crib. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but it talks about how from birth, kids are wired to be so curious about the world and start picking up on patterns and shapes, sizes, colors, numbers that we don't even give them credit for. So what if we take away the concept of when do we start doing this to just building it into our natural way that we interact with our kids and showing them large amounts of things and small amount of things and start talking about shapes and sizes and big, little, and look what happens when you rotate this. It's still the same thing and all those concepts. So if we're talking about formal math, there's definitely times in kids' lives that they're more, they're cognitively mature to get the concepts. And adding and subtracting, as formal, actual like formal disciplines, I'm going to say when they're school age, like 5, 6. However, you can start building in those concepts much, much earlier. Like with my kids, we do things, I call them we call them magic fingers or magic fingers. So I actually had these little frogs that I could stick on my fingers. The same way, like, when you were a kid, you put black olives on your fingers. Did you ever do that?
Yes.
Well, you could see five of them. And if I take two off and eat them or something, and you can still see three olives left but two fingers empty, I can say, how many did I eat? Well, how do you figure that out? You look and you see there's two empty fingers. That's actually a really valuable algebraic concept that, you know, figuring out if you have 5 minus B, what's left. So there's ways that you start building in the mathematics early that doesn't feel like mathematics. And actually, I had just written and trained a program for a big nonprofit in L.A. called L.A.'s Best. And I was working one of the activities with them, and I went to show them a concept, and one of the instructors said, oh, I forgot we were doing math. And I said, yes, then we are doing it right, because they were still doing things that were very sophisticated, but in such a way that people who tell themselves they don't like math, they forgot they were actually doing math, which I kind of loved. That it just became such a natural thing to think about. They weren't saying, oh, I'm doing math now. Okay, now I stopped doing math. No, we were just doing thinking and problem solving and what ifs and using a lot of I wonder how many, I wonder how much. And so those are just fabulous questions to start getting into your kids' minds, even early.
And my favorite was the one you were telling me about, the strawberries.
Oh, that was so much fun. That just came up, yeah, at a dinner time. I had put strawberries out, my son's sitting there waiting for the rest of his food, and I looked at them. There was about 5 of them, and I said, can you line these up from the smallest to the biggest? And I wasn't even sure what was going to happen. He was 2 at the time, and he did it. He completely did it. He lined them up, and I was like, wow, that's really cool. And I don't know if we give our kids opportunities enough to really think that way. We may think it's either too sophisticated or that it's not interesting, but being able to line things up, or one of the other great things are like those stacking cups where one sits inside of the other, and being able to take a bunch of those and size them or talk about what's the same about them, what's different, and just really building in those ideas that there's way to compare things, there's way to find patterns in the world, and that's really what math is all about.
This is the greatest information. It really is. And one of my questions that I know, you know, that we're asked so often, especially in the mathematical world, is, are shapes important? Because I remember you saying something about little kids, that when you're teaching them shapes, does that correlate to math?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What you're helping them do is build their visualization, their visual processing ability, their ability to take visual information and figure out some sort of generalization about it. Shapes are wonderful. They're just wonderful to work with, especially for little kids. I'm blown away. We were walking down the street one day, and again, my kids were 2 because they just turned 3, so this was last year, but my daughter goes, look, Mom, the stop sign's a hexagon. And it's an octagon, but to be 2 and to have that ability to make a statement like that, I was very proud, I have to say that. And I was like, that's great. Like, she recognized it was a shape and that it had a name. And so what was great is there was a security sign in somebody's front lawn that happened to be a hexagon right there. So I said, well, that one's an octagon, let's count the sides. That one's a hexagon, let's count those sides. And we kept going. So there was no time in the conversation that I had to say, no, that's not right. Because one thing that I find really important is not putting that no into your own dialogue about math. That is a sure way to shut down a kid's ability or desire to explore the concepts. Talking about one of the great things about math is solving a problem. And one of the things you get to do in solving a problem is try out solutions. Now, what you learn in math is that there are some solutions that work and some don't, and some processes that work and some don't. But early on, wouldn't it be great just to have kids try things and see what happened, whether or not they worked, and just build that thing that learning isn't scary, that it's not the learning that we have to have shame about. We shouldn't feel bad about trying to learn. And a lot of times what that no does is it tells them, oops, that's wrong. What I did was wrong. Because they hear no when they're doing something dangerous, unsafe, or something their parents don't want them to do. So if we say no when you're doing math, then you're telling them it's something dangerous, unsafe, or something you don't want them to do. And I would really like people to hear that, that learning math, and especially teaching young kids how to be curious about the world, taking that no out. And it's not easy to do. And it might not even feel harmless, but the way you can restructure it is, yeah, and just put that and in there, and then you can make the correction. But getting that no out, I just have found, has been a really great way to help kids build a solid self-esteem about the way they think so that they're more open to learn new ways to think.
This just fills my heart with joy. I mean, truly, my heart is so open right now. Imagine if we could do that and take out the no from our children and just to be able to allow them to explore and experiment and move forward with questions like, I wonder. I mean, I think that's just a beautiful way to teach, Erin. I mean, it really is. And just such a magical gift for all of the people that are listening, for all the children, and what a wonderful way for a new generation of thinkers to not be made wrong, but to actually find the doorway in which they're learning and their concepts and their beliefs and the way that they're unique and special and magical and gifted and genius, and allowing that to come through in their learning skills. It's just, I absolutely adore what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. I am so excited, and it's such an honor to be able to come on your show and talk about this. I cannot tell you how many people I have tried to corner and say, let's talk about math, and they go, oh, okay. But to have you open to it and just to see the value in it and allow other people to open their eyes to really the beauty of math is what I want to say. Is really a gift from you, too. So,
thank you so much. And then I have a big question. One of the big ones. The music in math. Because you always see, like, baby Mozart tapes or When a Woman's Tovin, and that if kids learn music or take piano lessons or violin or study, that they're going to have better math skills. Is that true?
Yeah. Is there an absolute direct correlation that if you play piano, you will be good at math? No. But the way that music is organized in the brain and the way that math and the sequential patterning is organized in the brain is very, very similar. So what we find, and actually there was recently some research done, and almost, well, actually I'm going to say every person that you have consider an innovative thinker was strongly rooted in music and taking music classes and playing instruments as kids. So there is a huge, huge area that music serves to academics, and it is just a tragedy when they don't offer music to more kids in schools. Just knowing that giving them the ability to become musically inclined and find the discipline in music leads to finding the discipline in other subjects. And, of course, that's not, you know, a blanket statement. Yes, Mozart will make your kid smart in math, but we do know that there is a correlation. And being able to use music to show patterns, to show fractions, and even in writing music and tempo, being able to relate those two is such a fun way for kids to start to get math. I think it's absolutely brilliant to put the two together. So I love that you asked that, yes.
Is there a reason that they choose classical music, do you know, over rock and roll or, you know, salsa or folk? music, or is it all music from drums to clarinet to violin to glockenspiel?
Yeah, what happens is if you're learning an instrument, you're learning how to essentially tempo your mind for sustained attention is really what's happening, if we want to put it in those kind of terms. As far as what is the best music to relax you and make you absorb more information, and it's a little bit off of the math, it's more broad, but believe it or not, Baroque classical music at a tempo of 60 beats per minute is found to be the ideal learning music. If you have that playing lightly in the background, you're putting your brain into a wavelength that is more prone to being able to take in concepts. And there's a whole movement of people who use Baroque music, and you can go online and just search it and find just hours and hours of Baroque music that you can just put on the background and listen to. Now, I question whether that works with kids who cannot have any music in the background, because then that might just be a distraction to them. But they have found if you are going to use music, that music is the one that's to enter the right mindset. And it has to do with 60 beats per minute putting you at alpha waves, which are delta waves are when you're sleeping. Alpha waves are just above that, so you're very conscious. It's almost like a meditative state, but not sleepy. And then beta waves are when you're super active and your brain is going way too fast. So if you can study in the alpha wave state, then you're getting the most information into the calmest mind that isn't like reeling around thinking about everything else. And that's the research that I know. So there's a couple of my videos that actually I play Baroque music in the background, but for me, I find music a little distracting in the background, so I was like, I have to turn this off.
I love the fact that you were saying you pop in and out of the videos. I think that would be so much fun. I want to get one just so I could see you occasionally go, hi.
Yeah.
I'd be like, hi, Erin.
Yeah, I start one of them with the first thing I said in the video and in the lesson is, you have a beautiful face. And my students have seen that and are like, what? you have a beautiful face, and let's dive into math because you're a beautiful person. Here we go. And I'm not sure many math till that one starts.
I so love what you're doing. You have no idea. This is so delicious, and it's so incredible to me, and it's so exciting for me to be able to share this, and I wish you around when I was a child, but I'm so glad you're here now for kids and for future generations and even for adults that are finding you at this point. It's just absolutely brilliant, and I'm excited, too, because I know that you're writing or you're blogging or working for a magazine, so you're sharing your information even beyond the homework lounge. So tell me about that, because that's great.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I got called and asked to be the math contributor for a national publication called The Homeschool Handbook, The Homeschool Handbook, and it's online, and you can read them for free, or you can be a subscriber and get it delivered to your house. So it's a beautiful magazine, and it's really full of great information, but I was very honored that they asked me to come on and help their homeschooling community learn more about math and how to make math accessible to their kids. And I really appreciate them doing that, because I know that there's often debate about math, whether or not it's useful, and I just adamantly say, yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's a way of teaching us and our kids how to think, how to work through failures, how to work through mistakes and continue on, and really build up a great, solid sense of being able to think and be proud of that thinking. And I just hope that I can really reach out and help families who are looking for support in getting their children really good math education. So.
This is just, it's thrilling. It's absolutely, it's like this high-speed car just going like, shoo, just because as truly, as the information goes by, and so I know people are really now curious, how do they find you? How do they, I'm sure everybody's got their kids all lined up, and they're like, okay.
Yes, grab a pen and paper.
You're beautiful.
Okay, all you beautiful faces that are ready to learn some math, I am best reached at Erin, E-R-I-N, at thehomeworklounge.com. And you can find us online at thehomeworklounge.com. I'm also on Twitter. It's the HW Lounge. So there's still homework in there, but it's shortened, the HW Lounge. And I would offer the opportunity to talk to anybody about what they want or what are they seeing or what struggles they're having with math, and really helping guide them along so that they can find some peace and freedom in their math ability and their kids' ability, because I really feel for families that are struggling with math issues in their homes, because it really does tend to break families down far more than I think people who aren't dealing with it understand. But there is a way through it, and there is peace at the end of the tunnel, and there's good, solid math learning, too. So I would highly.
Kids in a family, like if you have several kids in a family, or if you have kids in a neighborhood that are all stuck together.
Yes.
They all have a terrible teacher, and none of them understand what she's saying.
Yeah, call me. We can put a program together.
That's great. And then one of the big questions I know that we have here is SATs.
Yes.
And that's a huge deal, especially for a child who's struggled for years now with math, and now they have to be able to pass this, you know, crazy test, this ominous, you know, for whatever it is, test in order to be able to get into college, and their future may depend on it. And so what happens there?
That is almost a different topic than being good at math, because that's being good at taking tests. And for kids who are struggling, and if they seem to be doing really well on the verbal portion and the comprehension portion, but they break down in the math portion, then I would suggest that they find somebody to work with who can really help them with test prep. Not only learning the concepts, but how to navigate the test. Because there's a difference, I think, between being really good at math and being a good test taker. And there are things that good, solid SAT tutors are going to teach you about navigating that test and being really good at the test. So the biggest piece of advice I can give people is do not wait till the last minute to start getting help for SATs. I know there's Khan Academy, which is it is the largest free online math site, and they're going to start offering SAT tests for kids to take for some practice. However, that is the practice piece, and what you need is the coaching piece in that. So it's not necessarily the same. But not waiting till the last minute, not waiting till a week or 2 weeks before the test to start getting these pieces into place, but really give it a good couple months. And if you're serious about passing this, then do a pretest, see how you do, and then determine what level of help you need to get through the rest. There is a lot of math on it. There definitely is. And it's manageable, though. It is manageable. Part of it is being able to get over test anxiety, which means being able to calm yourself before you even get to that testing area. And that comes with practice. That comes with doing the test many different times in a timed environment so that you know how you perform and you know where you start to lose focus. Is it at the end of the test? Is it certain kind of questions? Is it just, I don't know what the answer is, and you get stuck and you work too long on one problem rather than just skipping it and moving on? But there's a lot of tips and techniques that can be used, but they do take some training. So kids who are looking to get into college really would need to give themselves a couple months leeway, and imagine they're training for like a half marathon. You wouldn't start training for it a week before. You definitely say, okay, I'm going to run a marathon in 3 months or 6 months. So These are brain marathons, being able to do that many problems and that much thinking over an extended period of time. So it's the same thing, building up that muscle and that stamina to be able to go in and be successful in the test. But I think kids can do well on the test, and there shouldn't be a reason that they're so frightened of the math that they don't go and do it, or that they hold themselves back from opening that door.
That's just, it's wonderful advice. I love a brain marathon. I've never heard that term. I mean, that's such a great concept to say. It's just like running a marathon, and you have to start training for it. And for people that are listening to this, I think, what a gem of advice. I mean, truly, that's a jewel. The brain marathon.
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful. You should add that to your homework labs, the brain marathon.
The brain marathon, coach. Yeah. Yeah, we've had students call us, or parents call, okay, they're taking the test in 2 weeks. And even for the ISEE, which is the Independent Schools Entrance Exam, which to get into private schools, those are pretty rigorous tests too. And we can help with 2 weeks leeway, but it's so much easier and so much stressful if we think of it as a marathon and really start training several months in advance.
That's going to be one of my favorite terms now, the brain marathon. It really is. People say, where did you hear that? It'll be like, from Aaron.
Oh, I can't talk now. I'm training for my brain marathon.
Brain marathon. One of my favorite things is that people thought you were in Europe or abroad. That's one of the funniest things I ever heard. I was so busy studying, they thought I had left the country.
Isn't it? They really did. I literally was gone. I studied so hard my junior year. By my senior year, something clicked, and I got all the math. And that was senior-level college mathematics for a math major. And I got it. I aced my senior year. But my junior year, I struggled. And, walking along campus, you're here? We thought you moved. I'm like, no. I've actually been in the same apartment for a year. That's when I knew, okay, I might need to emerge from my math bubble and get back out in the world. This is college.
It's just, what an incredible journey. And then we only have a couple minutes left, but one of the things I did want to touch on before we end out is that we were talking about how many people, and I know that this is a blanket statement, but it's true. If we were to just go ahead and poll all the people that are listening to this show right now internationally, not just in the United States, but all around the world, and all of our listeners that are here with us, and that are downloading us and then listening to us, you know, at various times and at various countries and various times, that one of the things that we were talking about is that there is a great statement that people say is like, I'm not going to need this once I get out of school, that math is just, I just need this for fifth grade, for eighth grade, and as soon as I graduate, I'm never going to use this again, so why do I have to learn this? And you and I were having this really sweet conversation that you were saying, but what if you're flying and the time changes, or you need to know the temperature of where you're going, or what if you need to leave a tip? And so do you think that most people don't even realize that every day how important math is to our lives?
I think what they don't realize is how much easier life is knowing that math, how much less stressful it is. And learning the math helps us become better people and really helps us be at greater peace. And I think people have to think about that one for a bit. But if you go into the store and you only have X amount of dollars to spend and there's two different sales going on, being able to even pull out a calculator and figure out really quickly which sale is better is going to give you more peace than trying to wonder, sort of guess it, or not even know, or maybe get to the register and not have enough money. Or the example I said was you're flying to Canada and it's 34 degrees. What do you bring? Do you bring snow boots or flip-flops? Just basic things that once you have that knowledge in your mind, you keep using it and you get curious about it. I have so much fun going to the grocery store. It's cat food usually, to be honest. And when it's on sale for 47 cents per can, or I can get 24 cans for $12.99, I actually do the math real quick. And a lot of times it's actually cheaper to buy the individual cans, which would be surprising, I think. But because I know the math, I get to figure that out, and I go, ha, I just saved myself 87 cents or whatever. But I think knowing the math is really, just think about it as being, it's bringing you some peace. It's getting you just at a better place in your life where you're able to make better decisions and not have to rely on other people's word because you know how to solve the equation for yourself.
Well, I'm so glad you said that because I think that Erin and the homework lounge equal peace of mind and certainly a freedom and a joy and a different way of living and a much, you know, accelerated way of life just simply because of the ease and the joy and the fun and the freedom that you've given this beautiful thing that we call math. And I'm so honored and grateful that you would take time from your very busy 24 hours and from your twins who are three, which I absolutely love, to talk to our audience and to share with us that there is another way to truly have that happily ever after, which we're all looking for and are all desiring and all deserve, and especially for all those that are listening to this show that are new moms that are planning on having children or step-parenting and stepping into relationships, marrying someone with children, and they're right at that age. And, of course, you want to love them and protect them and cherish them and give them the best of everything, and certainly self-confidence. And ease of math is something that it is just an invaluable gift. So thank you for being with us. It is a joy. It is a pleasure. And I am certainly grateful for you and the path you have chosen.
Oh, Nicole, thank you so much. This was so much fun. So much fun to talk to you again.
Thank you. And I look forward to you popping onto my screen and saying, hi, it's Erin. And you have a beautiful face.
By the way, you have a beautiful face. I'm going to send that to you right now.
Thank you, Erin. I look forward to talking to you again, and thank you so much for such a wonderful show.
Okay, bye-bye.
The Homework Lounge. Gosh, math made easy. I love the fact that she works with everybody the way that they think. If you're a visual learner, an auditory learner, just however it is, if you're kinesthetic, that she does it through games, that she does it through fun, that it's individual, that wherever you are, that she'll take you into playing games and into other forums, and so your brain has that expansion of thinking, and then however your mind and creativity and consciousness, from that point, she is able to help you and wind that back into understanding math on a different level. I love never telling people that they're wrong or that they made a mistake or that they're bad, but to tell, say, I wonder, and allow people to go there, to start with children and the consciousness and how they think. I love the idea of Baroque music or however you learn, whether even if that's in silence, and the fact that there are forums. And some of the other things that I absolutely learned is that how she starts with so much support. But the idea is that when you finally say, I can do it, don't tell me, that she knows that you are ready to fly on your own. And that it goes from tremendous to you asking a question. So for this, I just think she's amazing and so much more. I wish you all a wonderful week. This is Nicole Brandon from Hourglass Bride, wishing you the happily ever after.